The Lord be with you.
And
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus and said to him, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask of you." He replied, "What do you wish me to do for you?" They answered him, "Grant that in your glory we may sit one at your right and the other at your left." Jesus said to them, "You do not know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup that I drink, or be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized?" They said to him, "We can." Jesus said to them, "The cup that I drink, you will drink. And with the baptism with which I am baptized, you will be baptized. But to sit at my right or at my left is not mine to give, but is for those for whom it has been prepared." When the ten heard this, they became indignant at James and John. Jesus summoned them and said to them, "You know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be the slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." The Gospel of the Lord. I have a good friend who was the chairman of the Bishop's Committee for Ecumenical and Interreligious Affairs for the last term. His name is Bishop David Talley. He's in Memphis, Tennessee, and I got to see him when we were at our Christian Churches Together conference week before last. And one of the things he said that as Christians in general, we have forgotten the centrality of the kerygma of our faith. The kerygma of our faith, what really matters, what is the heart of our faith, the core message, is that the Son of God became man to save man, to fulfill the sacrifice needed for the atonement of sin. So it's this kind of a difference between our pride and our humiliation. It was something that we could not do ourselves, so that the Son of God actually becomes humble and does it for us. He embraces the cross. In the first readings, the prophet Isaiah foretells he will give his life as an offering for sin. Through suffering, he will justify many, and their guilt he will bear. The word justify here means, for St. Paul, it means to restore everlasting life through him. The writer to the Hebrews says he was tested in every way, yet without sinning, unlike us, so that in him we can approach the throne of mercy and grace. So imagine what love God must be and what love he must have for us to do all of this. This is what we call the kerygma, the central core teaching of our faith. Instead, however, oftentimes I think the church lives on this system emphasizing law, rules, observance, who measures up and who does not measure up. And in this system, my compliance to the rules becomes my entitlement. I deserve the reward. Unfortunately, this also leads to judgment that others are or are not more deserving than me. I judge myself or I judge others. Judgment leads to division. We see this happening in our church from top to bottom. And suddenly I have turned you into the other. I think in this season of the election, we can see this happening everywhere, can't we? This is what we're doing. But notice what is happening already in the gospel. James and John say to the Lord, "In your glory, give us the best seats. We deserve them. One at your left and one at your right." And the others, when they hear that someone is trying to cheat them out of the best place, are indignant. Of course, in their defense, they did not yet know the kerygma like we do. Jesus says, "It shall not be so among you. Whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you will be the slave of all. You must consider yourself the least." Being the least is totally different, totally a different way of looking at the other person, someone to whom we must pay attention, someone we must care for, someone we must listen to, someone we must truly serve. This kerygma, the story of our salvation, only works if it is understood in this context of considering the other more important than yourself. Otherwise, Jesus' passion, death, and resurrection just looks like a cruel story of sacrifice to an angry God. But it is not. In the context of God's love first, the point is not the humiliation of Jesus. It is rather his freely chosen humility which allows reconciliation and mercy. I want to repeat that sentence. In the context of God's love first, the point is not the humiliation of Jesus. It is rather his freely chosen humility which allows reconciliation and mercy. The suffering of Jesus is the useful sacrifice given in love, which brings joy. This month, Pope Francis is in the second year all over the world for the Synod on Synodality. When you hear that word, synodality, do you still know what it means? I think we've talked about it for several years now, and we still don't know what it means. I wonder if most of the people in the church have any idea what it means, clergy or lay people. But synodality is one of the most ancient processes in the church, which turns to the people of God, the entire community of faith, as we see in the Acts of the Apostles, and listens to the voice of the Holy Spirit in what they are all saying. I wonder if you actually believe you have a voice in the church. Having received the Holy Spirit in baptism, does the Holy Spirit speak through you? Should we be listening to you? We had all those listening sessions a year ago, maybe, or a couple years ago, where we were listening to what people had to say. But unfortunately, although we scheduled three of them, we had a total of 60 people that came to all three. And there wasn't much of a response, because I don't think people really believe that they have a voice. It has, in tradition, been called the sensus fidelium, the sense of the faithful. And many misunderstand this to be what we see happening in other Christian churches, something that resembles a democratic vote where special interest groups fight for a majority. Unfortunately, in our world today, we always end up with these razor-thin margins, and the result is schism. The church is not like a parliament either. Pope Francis has a lot to say on this. The Catechism defines sensus fidelium like this: the supernatural appreciation of faith on the part of the whole people, when from the bishops to the last of the faithful, they manifest a universal consent in matters of faith and morals. The opposite of synodality is clericalism, when only the hierarchy is right and everyone else does not measure up. In order for synodality to happen, the church must listen to all people, even those who are not necessarily in communion with the church at the present time. It is about hierarchy listening to lay people and lay people listening to hierarchy. It is what the Second Vatican Council described for the first time in church documents as dialogue. Up to that point, before the Second Vatican Council, it was just monologue. The church was just talking, and we were listening. Suddenly, the church's job is now to listen. But it is much more than just a listening session with everyone who thinks like we do to come up with a strategic plan and an agenda that we wanted from the beginning anyway. It is a dialogue that is open to discovery and a change of heart. It is careful listening followed by prayerful discernment of the presence of the Holy Spirit. You'll see in the bulletin this weekend I've written, my article talks about the results of our forum, Christian Churches Together in Memphis, the week before last. It just so happens that I ended up on the team that was producing the message from the forum. So you'll see the results of the forum right there as I had written them, and we presented to the whole body of 40 Christian churches who were present. It is careful listening followed by prayerful discernment of the presence of the Holy Spirit. Cardinal Christoph Schönborn, Archbishop of Vienna, says that synodality simply means to walk together. And in order to walk together, he continues, we must be settled. Thank God, he says, we are, but many in this world are not. It is a shift from thinking of the church as a teaching church to thinking of our church as a learning church. You can't walk together on your own, Pope Francis says. We are all people of God, not just those in your tribe or those who think like you do. They all have a voice and need to know that they will be heard, regardless of their circumstances, emotional, economic, ethnic, or otherwise. All are valued. Cardinal Schönborn says that what Pope Francis is doing is merely what Vatican II called us to live. And we still have a lot to learn, as he said. He said, I myself have to listen more. This openness to hearing is what begins the healing and enlightenment by the Holy Spirit, who surely still is alive in the church. I would ask you, if you do not believe that the Holy Spirit could work through the people of God, the church, then why have a church at all? As one of my seminary professors would say, last one out, hit the lights. So this kerygma also only makes sense that Jesus Christ came and died and rose, one for all, so that all might rise with him. So we need a process where we all can be a part and know we belong. People aren't leaving Christianity. It seems they're leaving the institutions of Christianity. So what is the remedy? You know, and it's in the readings today, you know that those who are recognized as rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones make their authority over them felt. But it shall not be so among you. Rather, whoever wishes to be great among you will be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you will be the slave of all.